Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from BU Questrom School of Business. ESG, or Environmental, Social, Governance, promises to help the bottom line and the planet at the same time. Is it too good to be true? Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of an episode digging into that very question.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Jane Clayson, and this is On Point. That gorgeous melody of both tragedy and hope is from the 2018 film If Beale Street Could Talk. The story from the James Baldwin novel of the same name is just that, a tale of sorrow and trusting love. Regina King plays Sharon Rivers, the mother of a pregnant young woman whose boyfriend was falsely accused of rape. Her raw performance earned her a Golden Globe win and an Oscar nomination for Best Supporting Actress. This hour On Point, Oscar nominee Regina King. Join us. What did you take away from If Beale Street Could Talk? What themes are relevant today? Join us at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook. We're there at On Point Radio. With me from Los Angeles, California, is Golden Globe winner and Academy Award nominee for Best Supporting Actress, Regina King. How nice to have you with us, Regina. Welcome to On Point.
Hi, Jane. Nice to be here.
Well, congratulations to you on this Oscar nomination. Your first. Wonderful.
Yeah, it is.
Must be in the clouds. It was such a beautiful, beautiful performance. Just really.
Thank you.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit. Describe the story of love and tragedy and heartbreak and this beautiful young woman named Tish and this young man named Fani. How would you describe the film and its message?
Oh, I would describe the film as not the typical love story, because it is a representation of love between more than just two lovers. It's love between family members, love between friends, and how that love permeates and how it pushes through traumatic things that happen in lives, whether they're ongoing things. Love is finding the way to get on the other side of that trauma.
One critic wrote that you are, quote, the beating heart of some of the film's finest scenes. You've already earned a clutch of awards for your portrayal of Sharon, Tish's mother in the film. Here's a clip. Your character, Sharon, immediately supports her daughter, Tish, when she confesses she is pregnant. Here in this scene, Sharon shares the news with the rest of the family by giving a toast.
This is a sacrament. And no, I ain't lost my mind. We are drinking to new life. Tish gonna have Fani's baby.
Talk about the storyline here. Tish's boyfriend was falsely accused of rape. Give us a sense of how that plays out.
Well, during that moment that you just played, that audio, we learned that Tish and Fani have loved each other since they were little kids. And Fani is like a family member. And These young lovers find themselves in a place that's terrifying, but also one of the most beautiful moments a couple can experience together. And Tish comes to me to let me know that she's pregnant and she's scared, and her mother receives it with open arms and support. And she decides that, you know, we're going to share it with the family and we're going to celebrate it with the family. And that's what you hear in that moment.
You are really the foundation of this household. What did you draw on to make this character, Sharon, come to life?
Oh, I drew on personal experiences with my grandmother and my mother. My grandmother is definitely, she was definitely the matriarch of our family. She was the woman that you know, in her church, family, friends, always wanted Loretta to be around whenever they were going through anything, because she has had the, my grandmother is not with us anymore, but I speak about her in the present because she's always here. You know, I am her. But she has this presence that is comforting. And my mother embodies that same thing. So pulling on just that feeling that I've always felt as a child, as a mother, being part of a family that is very supportive, and also just recognizing that it's very rare to see ourselves in cinema or on television where the mother and father is in the home, mm-hmm. and loving on each other and creating a space for their children to thrive. And that was just so important to me, to get that right, to represent that honestly. And I think it was the same, not I think, it was the same for Coleman, Kiki, and Tiana, and Stefan, that we knew we had a responsibility to bring an honest portrayal to the Rivers family and Fonny.
James Baldwin wrote Beale Street in 1974, but the issues that the book highlights about race and rape and mass incarceration are still very much a part of our national discourse today. Regina King, how do you see this film fitting into the context of those conversations today?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, James Baldwin is just, he has been such an eloquent voice for America. You know, of course he is a black man, and he was speaking, he would write many essays about the systemic injustices that occur against black Americans. But, you know, one of the thing that's so beautiful about him is as he would write and speak with so much fire, he has so much love. I mean, one of his quotes that I think is represents who he is the most, who he was, is he said, "We can disagree and still love each other unless your disagreement is rooted, I think, in my oppression, the denial of my humanity and right to exist." And it's interesting that he said that so long ago, but yet we're still in so many different ways, you know, even just, I mean, I don't really want to get into politics, but just we still have a problem understanding the difference between disagreement and oppression. And that's just really frustrating and sad, but I feel blessed to be part of a piece of art that is a representation of how far we haven't come.
Let me get a listener in here from New Orleans who has a question for you, Regina King. Mel, you're on the air. Welcome to On Point with Regina King.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call. Mm-hmm. Regina King, I just wanted to tell you that was, I really enjoyed that film, and thank you for making that performance. I had a question about the way that the film ended. And, you know, one of the things that I found most painful and poignant about that film was how it didn't really have a concise ending, and that kind of spoke to I guess the perpetual nature of mass incarceration and how it really doesn't have an ending. I guess maybe it's more, do you have any comment on that aspect of the film?
Yes, no, absolutely. Thank you. excuse me. That was a wonderful choice that Barry Jenkins made. If you, in the book, that's not how the book ended. The book ended, you just didn't know what happened to Fonny. Mm. You don't know if he ever got out. You just know that he's in jail. When when you finish the book. And we actually shot that ending. The way Tish finds out that Frank, who's Fonny's father, kills himself. And she goes into labor, finding that out. And the baby is born. And we shot that ending. And when Barry was watching it and screening it to get feedback, what he was receiving was, after that beautiful scene that you see Stefan when he's, you know, just so angry and frustrated but still yet loving to Tish, people, you know, they did not see Fonny after that point. And they thought that, the audience thought that Fonny had killed himself as well. So Barry felt like he did not want two patriarchs, two fathers to die in the story. And if that's how people were receiving it, he felt like it was very important to change that. So they shot us, we shot another ending, and that was the ending you saw. So that ending is actually more hopeful, because Barry decided that when Fonny's character says, "I'm building a table for my family to eat around," it may not be the table that he built, but his family is there together.
Mel, thank you so much for the call. I am speaking with Oscar-nominated actress Regina King about her role in the film If Beale Street Could Talk. You can join the conversation, listeners. What's your question for Regina King about the life of an actor, about using your voice as a platform for change? More with Regina King and your calls after this break. I'm Jane Clayson. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken? A podcast from BU Questrom School of Business. A recent episode featured a debate about ESG, or environmental social governance.
This sounds like more work than just putting your money into a social impact fund.
It's a lot more work.
Yeah.
Anybody who thinks there's an easy solution here is either engaged in puffery, greenwash, or deceiving themselves.
Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the episode.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson. We're speaking with Regina King this hour about her powerful performance in If Beale Street Could Talk. She won a Golden Globe and is nominated for an Academy Award. You can join the conversation. Does Beale Street speak to you? Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook. We're there at On Point Radio. So many calls here. Let me get Noelle in from Norfolk, Virginia. Hi, Noelle. You're on the air with Regina King. Hi.
Hi, Jane and Regina. How are you?
Well, thank you.
Hi, Noelle.
Hi. Well, I just want to say I saw the movie about a week or so ago, and it's very deep. It's very poetic. And my mom is a painter. She's an artist. And we saw, you know, James Baldwin's documentary, or the updated one, about a year ago, and it's just, the movie itself is so deep. Great acting. You're definitely a power punch in the film, Miss King. I mean, you've always been outstanding. I'm just so proud of you and so happy. I'm sending you a hug through the phone. But the film did leave you with just, it's almost like a tragic urban opera, like the tragedy of what went on with, just even still now, the racism, the false accusations, and just like the beautiful love story of just still the enduring love that they had for each other, to still hang in there, had a child, and still stand by her man, you know, feeling, but it was still the disparity. I mean, you know, it's left you like, huh? You know, he's still there. And it was just like a, almost like a tragic urban opera, but it was so well told, and everyone in the film was outstanding. I just want to send you a hug through the phone.
Receiving the hug and sending it right back.
Noelle, thank you so much. You know, Regina King, much has been written about the dearth of tender black love stories in cinema, and Beale Street definitely fills a gap in that canon.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, that was, I think that's what makes Beale Street's, it was such a unique book as far as James Baldwin's writings were up until that point, because he was able to push through that love theme with such tragedy or trauma. I love the way Noelle kind of framed it as a urban tragedy.
Opera.
I think that, yeah, like an opera. I thought that was, that's fantastic. I'm going to have to handcuff that.
Noelle, thanks so much for the call. Regina, your character in the film, Sharon, immediately supports Tish when she says she's pregnant. It's a stark contrast to Fonny's mother's reaction. Here is a clip from that scene. Mrs. Hunt, played by Ingenue Ellis, upset, throwing insults at Tish. And Sharon, your character, Regina, confronts Mrs. Hunt and tries to reason with her.
The child is coming. It's your grandchild. I don't understand you. It's your grandchild. What difference does it make how he gets here? The child ain't got nothing to do with that. Ain't none of us got nothing to do with that.
Regina King, what does the ferocity with which Sharon defends both Tish and Fonny, what does it say about the struggles of black motherhood of the day, would you say?
Oh, well, first of all, I think it was so brilliant for James Baldwin and Barry. You know, it became Barry's adaptation, of course, to put these two women together that are so strong and just represent two different types of strengths. And when you have one strength, the source of it is fear, and the other, the source of it is love. And when you put those two together, you just get a really, I think, a perfect representation of fear versus love, love versus fear. And I feel like black mothers, black parents in America struggle with that every day. It's interesting when I was teaching my son how to drive, and one of my closest girlfriends, you know, our sons are the same age, and she's teaching her son how to drive as well. And we're talking at dinner. We went to have dinner, and I was talking about, you know, the things that I have to I'm just so nervous. I'm just so scared because, again, it's going out into the world now, and just even I can control even less of what happens. And she didn't quite understand that. And we spoke further, and we realized just the difference between being a white mother teaching her son how to drive and a black mother teaching her son how to drive, and the things that I have to make sure Ian knows to do if he gets pulled over, that she doesn't have to do that with her son. And, you know, she got a little emotional because she never considered that. And I think that's, we get a slice of that in such a deep way watching Beale Street, in my opinion.
Let's get Vera in here from Richmond, Virginia. Hi, Vera. Welcome to the program. You're on with Regina King.
Hello. Thank you. Mm-hmm. I wanted to say, Regina, excellent, excellent acting on your part. And actually, I've loved you in every single film I've seen you act in. And I did have a question, though. I just felt like your role as a mom when you first found out that the character was pregnant, I just felt like a lot of African-American moms and even moms, period, would have been a little bit more upset at first and then maybe would have been a little bit calm. I thought You know, that took a lot to take it the way that you did. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I understand that. I think I feel a few things about that. As far as one, we were staying honest to the material. And Barry, when he was writing the story, that was one of the things that was very important to him, because he wanted to honor James Baldwin's work. And so there's so much of the words that were written in the book that are actual dialogue in the script and film. And I felt like it was refreshing to see, to not see the anger. And this woman, Sharon Rivers, she exemplifies control that a lot of human beings do not have. And it gives it as an arc, a character arc, seeing her be in control of receiving information like that. It's a better payoff when she loses a bit of control when she's not able to get the job done in Puerto Rico. And it's also very much, we believe, Coleman and I, when we were doing a bit of our building, our background for Sharon and Joe, felt like we were Tish and Fonny at one time. When you see yourself in someone else, in something else, and you wish you may have had that same support, that we felt like maybe Joe and Sharon talked about it a little later and said, now, you know, that was us. And you know, my mama didn't. She didn't take it so well and decided to, support their girls. So that's how we approached it. And I felt like it was refreshing to see.
Vera, thanks so much for the call. Let's get another in here from John in Baltimore, Maryland. Hi, John. You're on the air.
Hi. My question was also that scene where the father got upset at his wife. It was, to me, that was one of the most powerful scenes because I could kind of relate to that. And in the age of Me Too and all this being politically correct, I thought it was courageous of you guys to put that scene in there where the father confronted his wife physically. And how was that decision made? It seemed like, you know, that was like toe the line. I like the scene and I respect the scene, but I know that it must have been difficult to like.
It was rough. No, John. Thank you, Regina King.
Yes, thank you, John. It was definitely, it's rough for people to see and to watch, but it's also a truth. It's interesting because you have so many people react a different way when they are watching that scene. You know, you have people that feel guilt because they feel like in the moment that's what she gets because she said such horrible things. And then I feel so bad because I'm thinking that. And that's kind of what we struggle with as human beings all the time, to just how to control our emotions. And that was, again, in the book. And again, Barry was honoring this book. If you get the opportunity to read the book, you will just see just so many similarities. And it's very difficult when you're doing an adaptation from a book because you're condensing and you're trying to make sure you tell that story without disrupting the original content. That's why so often you see in a film inspired by, you know, opposed to adapted.
John, thanks so much for the call. There were two scenes in the movie, If Beale Street Could Talk, Regina King, that were particularly moving. I wanted to ask you about them. The scene when your character Sharon goes to Puerto Rico to confront your son-in-law's accuser, and the scene in the hotel room where you're putting on and then taking off a bobbed wig. It was very moving. Tell me about the filming of that scene, what you wanted to convey in this moment of really introspection.
Well, there was so many things, you know, kind of going back to, I think, Marilyn, who called in. It's that moment where you're seeing the woman that has been able, that is so good at controlling her emotions and soothing those around her. You're witnessing her within her moment of fear. Her moment when she's like, I don't want to do this, but has to suck it back in because she has to, that it's all leaning on her. And normally she has Joe to lean on in times of trauma, but she's there by herself. And here's this woman that's never probably been out of the country. Right. What does that look like? What does that smell like? What does that feel like? What does that sound like? And these are all the things that are going through Sharon's mind in that moment. In the book, it was actually a shawl that she takes off and puts on and takes back off. And when I read the book after reading the script and found out that I'd gotten the part, I called Barry and asked him what did he think about it being a wig instead of a shawl, because thinking about my grandmother and her having her wigs and wigs for different occasions, and they almost seem like armor. They seem like it helped her move through whatever occasion she was going to encounter. And I felt like that represented women so strongly, so clearly. I felt women of all colors, all ages could understand that even more than the shawl. And he liked that. He agreed that he was not a woman and that he was thought that that was a good idea.
And he trusted you. Yeah.
And he trusted me. Well, yeah. He creates a space where you feel comfortable to bring an idea to him and know that it's going to be heard.
The other scene, the Puerto Rico scene, was particularly moving. And the other scene was when Tish has the baby and you are standing over her shoulder. It is so evocative, really emotional, even, Regina.
Yeah, it's so interesting, Jane, when shooting that scene, it did not feel as emotional as it was when you're watching it in context, when you're watching it in order, in after you've seen and experienced everything that happens in this family's life, in this slice of their life. And so to see it in real life, it being a mother myself, was just like, it was rewarding in a lot of ways, because here you have this beauty that's coming through amongst the bruises. And it's something that I always say, find the beauty in the bruises. And when I watched that scene at TIFF, when I saw the film, I felt like, well, there you go. That's the beauty in the bruises.
I read where you said that you don't like to watch yourself in your own work.
I do not.
I'm curious what it was like to see this film, especially on the big screen. Such an emotional work.
Yes. Here's the thing. I would plan not to, again, watch this. I have not watched myself in something in years. And Dee Dee Gardner, who's one of our producers, she was like, you have to see this. You have to see this film. Not even for your performance. You have to see this film. So I'm like, yeah, you know, you're right. This is Barry Jenkins and James Baldwin. You're right. Remove yourself, Regina, from this. It's not all about you. And 5 minutes into watching this film, I started tearing up. And I was like, oh, my God, what's happening? And I realized that this film is a visual symphony. It's a audio, it's a symphony for your ears, for your eyes, for your heart. Barry just found a way to take James Baldwin's beautiful words and paint such a quiet, lovely picture that draws the audience in. And I was there for it 5 minutes in.
I want to ask you about your Golden Globes acceptance speech after the break, Regina, and your call for gender parity in Hollywood. We'll get to that after the break. I'm speaking with actor, director, producer Regina King, and you can join us, listeners. Do you think Hollywood has taken a turn on the issue of gender parity, on racial parity? I'm Jane Clayson. More of your calls and Regina King after this break. This is On Point.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Scene. Listen and follow Last Scene wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, On Point listeners. I'm poet and author Shinyi Pai. As you celebrate Asian American Pacific Islander Heritage Month, I invite you to listen to the 10,000 Things podcast from KUOW and the NPR Network. 10,000 Things is a podcast about modern artifacts of Asian American life, ordinary objects that tell extraordinary stories and reveal something profound about the experience of being Asian in America. Find 10,000 Things from KUOW and the NPR Network, wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson. We're talking with Golden Globe winner and Oscar nominee Regina King this hour. Her movie is If Beale Street Could Talk, and you can join the conversation. What are you hearing in Regina King's story? Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook. We're there at On Point Radio. Let's get some of these calls in here. Caroline is in Stamford, Connecticut. Hi, Caroline. Welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you. I wanted to call. I just saw this movie this weekend, and I'm just so moved by it, and I'm moved by everyone's performances. And I wanted to say to Regina King that I was like entranced by you the whole time. I think that you represented such a strong character, and just really, I feel like, represented what so many women feel like they have to be in order to face, you know, adversity. And that scene where you're with Veronica in Puerto Rico, it just made me weep because I'm a survivor myself, and I felt like that's exactly how it feels. And I knew that she wouldn't want you to touch her, but you needed to because you were pleading for your child. So it's like, what do you do in that situation, you know? And you were incredible.
Oh, thank you, Caroline. Thank you so much for sharing that and sharing a bit of your journey. I appreciate that. Scene was, it was heavy. All of the women, I feel like, that had anything to do with this movie, this film, it was very important for us to make sure that it was clear that we believed, our characters believed, Veronica's story. We just knew that it wasn't Fonny. And what do you do with that? How do you protect a woman that has been violated this way? And save your child. You know, that's like you pray no one could be in a situation like that. And here we are. Here we find ourselves in that space. And there were scenes that weren't in the film that we actually shot prior to that. We shot them in sequential order. So there's like two or three scenes that lead up to that moment. And Emily Rios, who plays Victoria, such an amazing actress, prepared, focused actress. We needed although the audience didn't need to see those scenes to tell the story, we needed those scenes so that you can feel them and the story can be told. And I'm so lucky for Emily as a scenes partner, and the abuelitas that came in that collect her. That's another layer of women surrounding and protecting each other.
That's right.
Quite beautiful. Tragic and beautiful at the same time.
Carolyn, thank you so much for that call. Here's Beth in Atlanta, Georgia. Hi, Beth. You're on the air with Regina King.
It's my pleasure. Thank you so much for taking my call. I just kind of want to grab hold to the tails of the coats of all those who have just given you the accolades that I think you so well deserve. And I wanted to thank you, Regina King, for your past, present, and future, keeping it real, keeping it relevant. I haven't seen the movie, but I will see it this weekend. I'm looking forward to it. The story is so beautiful and so real that I know you're shining. I know you shine. Thank you very much.
Thank you for the call, Beth. Regina, let me play this clip. While you were accepting your award for the Best Supporting Actress at the Golden Globes last month, you promised that future projects will all have gender parity. Here you are.
I am making a vow, and it's going to be tough, to make sure that everything that I produce that is 50% women. And I just challenge anyone out there who is in a position of power, not just in our industry, in all industries, I challenge you to challenge yourselves and stand with us in solidarity and do the same.
All projects you produce will include at least 50% women, and you challenge the rest of Hollywood to do the same. Wow.
Yeah, I was challenging people in all industries, not just Hollywood.
Okay.
Yeah, because we need to see that parity across the map with everything.
So that's a heavy lift. What was the reaction to that?
It's actually been amazing how many people want to be a part of that, how many people have been inspired to do a version of the same, how many women who are in certain positions as far as their employees. I've had one of my friends that has, she said she watched the show and got so emotional, and it inspired her to start her own company and no longer be an employee. So that's the point, you know. You want to plant a seed in the ground, and hopefully you'll nourish it, and others will plant more seeds, and eventually you'll have a forest.
Let's get Tracy in here from Columbus, Georgia. Hi, Tracy. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I just wanted to say to Regina that I've been following your career for decades. You are brilliant, and not just as a woman or as a person of color. You are just a brilliant artist. I can't believe it's taken so long for you to get an Oscar nomination. I've watched you in several films, several series, and I just think you're a phenomenal artist. So I'm looking forward to whatever you're going to be doing in the future.
Thank you.
Awesome.
Thank you, Tracy.
Tracy, thank you so much. A role model to many. I know Regina King. You started in Hollywood on the television series 227, starring Marla Gibbs and Helen Martin. You worked with some very successful Black female actors at a very early stage of your career and really your life. I'm curious how you've seen the kinds of roles available to African-Americans, and especially African-American women, evolve over your career.
Excuse me. I feel like there have been there's been some evolution, very slow, very small, you know, little pockets here and there, and then we'll have a lull, and then something will come again. I think just women, period, whether it's a woman of color or not, we gravitate to characters that are strong. And not just women, young women, girls. Mm. And when you are a Black woman, a Black girl, and you don't have as many examples that look like you, that are strong and successful, and are confident in speaking their truth, and you don't have that around you in your real life, it's really hard to figure out your walk, you know, to walk with your head high. And I have been lucky where I've had that in my personal life and in my business, my young business life, you know, with Marla Gibbs and Helen Martin, and just hearing Helen Martin telling stories of what she endured as she was coming up. And then just hearing some of those stories repeated with Marla and what she endured, you know, being in the business, and seeing Marla, who kind of started her career in this industry late. You know, she was a single mother, and we didn't know about Florence until, or Marla Gibbs, until we saw Florence. Mm-hmm. And it's just, I guess just when you have that around you, when you see a woman fight for her art and have so many people try to shut her down, but still rise up is fantastic. As a child, you're not really aware that you're receiving all of that. But now as a woman, I know that I was receiving it, and it's time for me to employ what I've received.
Let's get Nadine in here from Canton, Ohio. Hi, Nadine. Welcome to On Point with Academy Award nominee Regina King.
Hello. Thank you very much for taking this call.
You bet.
I had a question for Regina. Well, let me put it this way. I haven't seen the movie yet because I'm reading the book, and I want to read it before I see the movie, but I definitely will see Beale Street. But I have a question about a Netflix film that she starred in called 7 Seconds. And in that film, she went from a middle-class, very happy Black housewife to a depressed woman living in her car. And because mental illness is such a part of our life today, especially manic depressive, I just wanted to know how Regina prepared for that part to go from one extreme to the other.
Nadine, thank you. Let me play a clip, Regina. I have it here, of 7 Seconds. You actually received the Primetime Emmy Award for your performance in the Netflix crime drama 7 Seconds. Here's a scene from the series. Your character, Latrice, and her husband, Isaiah, played by Russell Hornsby, learn that the man accused of hitting and seriously injuring their son with his car may only receive 3 to 5 years in prison. Here it is.
My son laid in the cold, in the snow, in pain for hours. And no one came for him except the dog. He may never walk again. He may never wake up again. And you're telling me that the person that did this I'll get 3 to 5 years. That man deserves to die for what he did to my son.
Regina King, to Nadine's question, what was that like to prepare for another intense and emotional role?
That right there was probably the hardest role ever in my life. I am a mother of a son, so to go someplace really dark about something that you pray you never ever experience is a terrifying dive. I originally, when Vina Sood came to me about playing Latrice. When I read the script, I thought the pilot was brilliant, but I wanted to play KJ, who is the attorney in the show. And Vina was just adamant on that I should play Latrice. And I thought the writing was so good that I took a breath, I prayed on it, and I decided to take that dive. And I realized that the reason why I didn't, and I was telling Vina that I want to play KJ because I haven't played a role like that, a role that's, you know, messy, and she's not a mother. And so I gave all of these reasons why KJ would be a good role for me, all the reasons being a role that I haven't played. And she, you know, came back with, you haven't played a mother like this before, a mother dealing with this before. So I decided to take the role. And I realized, you know, maybe by the second episode that I was scared to take this dive. And that was the reason why I didn't take the I was scared to take the role was the reason why I wanted KJ. And to be in that space for that period of time is depressing. I was so lucky to have an amazing cast to work with. They're all such great actors. And we would go to brunch together. We would go to lunch together and kind of just talk about it, because we were all, you know, dealing with subject matter. You know, David Lyons, you know, he's playing someone that's nasty, that's just horrible. And we just kind of together found a way to get through that. Russell Hornsby, my God, if I did not have him for those 4 or 5 months, I don't know how. We just held each other up. We really did. It made me understand when you're breaking down Latrice and pulling the layers off, and knowing that that first episode you're seeing her and you feel like she's happy and they're happy, and you discover you caught the butlers during a happy moment, but there was unhappiness prior to that. Mm-hmm. And it just takes one incident to trigger the mind to go someplace dark.
Regina King, I have 20 seconds here. Once said you do not have any desire to play women that are not strong. So what strong woman is next?
Oh, my goodness. Well, I am currently shooting The Watchmen, Damon Lindelof's next project for HBO.
And guarding every last detail like a Game of Thrones.
Oh, my
secret.
God. I really am. I am the gatekeeper, the everything. You know, I'm terrified. I don't know what HBO might do if I reveal anything.
Well,
but
good
she,
luck.
I can say
good
she's
luck.
Strong.
Well, good luck with that. And Golden Globe winner, Academy Award nominee, role model to many, Regina King. Thank you so
Thank
much
you.
For being with
Thank
us today.
Thank you, Jane.
Appreciate
Thank you.
It. This hour, you've been listening to Oscar-nominated original score from If Beale Street Could Talk. We go out with the song Eden. I'm Jane Clayson. This is On Point.
Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from BU Questrom School of Business. Listen on for a preview of one of the episodes.
Can Profit Motive Save the Planet is a company that takes the climate into account a better investment? How about one that pays workers a living wage and champions transparency and board diversity? That's the idea of ESG, or environmental social governance.
sounds like a wonderful story. You can make more money, you can save the planet at the same time. Almost no one is going to turn that down.
It's a story that Andy King of Questrom and Veet Henish of the Wharton School challenged during a recent event at Questrom. Professor King played the critic, who says these are problems for regulation to solve, not markets.
As a famous economist said to me, you can't fix externalities with the profit motive, because the profit motive is not linked to externalities. Externalities are the byproduct of pursuing profits. So you can't fix them by getting people to even look harder at profits.
Meanwhile, Veet emphasized that ESG can be an important part of the solution.
Regulation matters, and we need better regulation. And we need to reallocate trillions of dollars of capital over time to the climate transition alone, forgetting social justice, racial justice, and other ESG issues. We're going to need the profit motive for that. No government regulation is going to reallocate tens of trillions of dollars of capital alone. It's going to be investors who are looking at current government regulation and future government regulation and trying to connect the dots.
Find the full episode by searching for Is Business Broken wherever you listen to podcasts, and learn more about the Mehrotra Institute for Business, Markets, and Society at ibms.bu.edu.